And welcome to CHRW. This is Between the Margins. I'm Michelle Boyce.
I'm Deborah Hamza.
And this is the show about human rights and people's pursuit of happily ever after. And to tell you the honest truth, I'm not sure where this show fits into that one. Today we're talking about, just in case, you know, you've been really busy at work and, you know, under a rock or something, there is a huge controversy about this couple in Toronto that have a four-month-old baby named Storm that the family is refusing to tell the general public the baby's sex. This, you might say, who cares? And generally speaking, one would think that that would be the reaction. But around the world, that is not the reaction. The public outcry to this secret that this family has dared to keep has happened. This was back 3-4 weeks ago, and the story is still going strong. And it's not the first time that this has hit the press. Back in June of 2009, a Swedish couple dared to do the same thing with their 2-year-old child, and with varying results. So I have two wonderful guests on the show. I have Miss Linda Martins, who is a marriage and family therapist here in London. And I have Dr. Eric Fisher, back on the show again. This is his second time on the show. You there, Dr. E?
Yes.
Awesome. Thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here today.
So just to recap exactly what this story is and what has been happening on this story is this couple has 2 children already. They have Jazz, who is 5, and Keo, who is 2. And they're both boys. And Jazz is having some gender issues, or anyways, he's expressing his gender in variant ways that may cause some people to have some alarms. And so with that experience with Jazz, this family has decided to not reveal Storm's gender to the general public so that the public doesn't apply stereotypes to the child, and the child can figure it out for themselves, so to speak. And this apparently has messed with something that you're not supposed to mess with in society. So if you want to call into the show, you're welcome to do that. The phone number is 519-661-3600. And we've got new producer behind the desk. Michael's helping out, and Kim's there. And this is her first time, so hats off to her. And we'll hope this goes smoothly for today. Anyways, let's hear from our guests. Linda.
Yes.
Yes. What's your thoughts, opening thoughts of this story?
Hi, Michelle. I certainly understand the point that these parents are trying to make. We all want to protect our kids from stereotypes based on gender. I caught my father holding his brand new great-grandchild a few months ago, saying to this little baby boy, "Oh, don't you cry now. You're a boy. That's for girls." So we all want to protect our kids from these things. But one of my worries is that the point is kind of getting lost here, that the controversy seems to be not so much about that issue, but the fact that these parents are making public something that they're saying is very private. So it's kind of complicated and a bit moving away.
Yeah, it's a contradiction to what they're doing, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah, I think so too.
So they're saying that Storm's genitalia are only Storm's business, but they're really making it the business of the world, which is kind of strange.
Dr. E?
Well, on that exact point, I very much agree. And I think, though, that in some of these situations, the media come to these situations. And she's, in reading the letter that she wrote and sent out, I think she'd probably like to keep some things private, but it's drawn so much attention and the media's grabbed onto it that I think they're kind of blowing it up as well. But in sometimes in parents' efforts to make a statement for their children to grow up in a better world, you know, quote unquote, I think that you can get lost in your own agenda, and it, exactly where her agenda begins and ends and where her child's, you know, welfare is in her mind, you know, that's something that is up for debate. There was a book that came out, I think it was last year, called Princess Boy. And that got a lot of coverage when the girl, the mother, wrote a story about her son who liked to dress up in dresses and wrote this Princess Boy book. And the attack that she received here in the States was just really off the line when, you know, she was trying to bring attention to our gender stereotypes and let kids figure things out for themselves. And I love my son no matter what. You know, so I think we have to look at that. What I always often say is that if the people who had such an issue with these, with the issues in society, like parenting and things, spent as much time parenting their own kids, I think we'd have a lot better world to live in, you know?
Exactly. Well, I just want to give you an idea of what people are saying out there. And on YouTube, there's a couple of medias called the Young Turks, and they put a show on. And 2 years ago, they had a segment on the other Swedish couple that went through this, and I've got a little clip of their engaged there, and we'll have that clip for you. In
two parents in Sweden mm-hmm. want to keep their child genderless.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's a really crazy story. These parents, first of all, they refer to their kid as Pop.
That says that, you know, we are taught these social roles, and if we're not taught the social roles, then it frees them up to be a human being rather than a boy or a girl.
Right.
How old is this kid going to get before you start telling him or her what she is, or he is, right? It doesn't make any kind of sense. No, 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 we don't want you to have any gender roles, so we're not going to tell you what you are. But, Mom, Dad, I got a penis. And that gives me a pretty good freaking clue as to what I am.
But, okay, to the parents' credit, at some point they realize that. They realize the kid is going to realize whether it's a girl or a boy, right? And they want that to happen. They want him or her to come up with that on his or her own.
If my boy wants to play with a Barbie doll, have at it, hoss. I mean, give him a whole Barbie house, okay? Go crazy.
Right.
But especially if it's a boy, and he's dressing up in a skirt one day and pants the other day. I mean, thank God he's in Sweden. I don't know how they roll in Sweden. But here in the U.S., he'll be given a role, okay? And if he goes to schools in the U.S. and he's dressing up one way or the other, the role he'll be given is a girl. You're not going to say, oh, well, he's a dude, but he dresses up in a skirt some days, and that's totally fine. That's, okay, if you said if you're a boy or a girl, you want to play with whatever you want to have, et cetera, great, I'm with you, right? But if you say, I'm going to enforce this this gender neutrality on you, and that's not... Look, let's talk about the 1967 case.
No, I will. But they're not forcing gender neutrality on this kid, because this kid gets to choose what he or she gets to wear. Okay, this kid gets to choose what he or she gets to play with. That's what their whole concept
is. How does a two-year-old choose?
I think two-year-olds are smart enough to pick out what they want to wear.
Yeah, all right.
But like I said before, learning to eat with a fork and a knife, that's something that, you know, is a social standard. That's something that is taught to you by society, right? Gender is not something that's taught to you by society. Of course, society has a role to play in it, but it's hormones, testosterone, you know, things like that. That's what helps you determine whether or not you act like a girl or a boy.
I agree. So I think their effort is futile anyway. So what's their point?
So that gives you an idea of 2 years ago what the story was about that. And
right.
And not a lot has changed between now and the outcry that we're having now with this baby Storm. Let's just throw it right out there. Is this healthy?
Can you even create a vacuum around sexual identity? I don't know if you can. I don't think it's impossible for these parents to keep themselves from interacting with their child based on gender. I think it happens naturally. And is it all bad?
Well, I've got
I think...
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I've got a saying when I'm doing gender identity workshops, and you know, way down about three quarters of the way into the saying, you know, everybody starts asking me, well, when you've got a trans child, and wouldn't it be great if there was a test to see if they have a male brain or a female brain? And everybody all of a sudden wants that test. And we don't have that test. The gray matter in the brain to develop to a point where we can actually detect whether it's a male or female brain is, you know, by the time you're 30, we can pretty much tell if it's a male or a female brain. But we don't have that test at birth. But my question is always to that audience, wouldn't it be great if it didn't matter? Wouldn't it be great if the second a baby popped out of the womb, we didn't restrict 50% of the world's opportunities and experiences from that child based on gender?
I'm not sure if
it
always...
Well, I think in a lot of ways we live vicariously through our kids, you know, that we have these hopes and dreams and expectations. It's the same thing when a child grows up a certain way and then they get to an age and they might go to their mom or dad and say, you know, I'm gay. And then all of a sudden there go the thoughts of, am I going to have grandchildren or are they now limited from this? Or I just want my child to have a better world. And what I always tell parents is that your child is not your possession. Your child is a gift to you. And it's up to you to guide them in life and help direct them. And I do believe that by 2 years old, kids do have very good ideas. It's our society that limits their ability to express their strengths and gifts naturally because we assume that they don't know. And I think the intuition of kids from very early on is very high. And if we listen to them, you know, our kids are often our greatest teachers.
Linda?
I think there's also value in having a gender identity. I think that might be getting lost too, that, you know, identity helps us feel secure and confident and know ourselves. And knowing our children as a boy or a girl actually can facilitate attachment in a strange way. You know, it's not all bad. We might be throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. And I mean, I guess this is chicken and the egg conversation, right? Which comes first? And I mean, it's now pretty much universally medically recognized that somebody is born boy or girl or somewhere in between on the spectrum, but at birth their sex is set. It may not agree with their genitalia, it may not agree with what the parents or the doctors say it is, but it's set.
Yes, and
well,
having a boy and okay, helping that boy to embrace his manhood doesn't necessarily mean excluding everything that's feminine about him. Can we do both?
And that's the thing. We need to do both for children to have a chance when they're born.
Right. And that's, I think, about kind of the balance and things, because there are ways that we do treat people differently from expectancy models. You know, if we look at expectancy models in psychology, what people expect often will determine behavior. And I think it's those issues that parents trying to prevent in terms of how everybody treats them. You know, I've worked very hard with my daughter. She's been growing up to make sure that she's very well balanced, that we give her the opportunity to, you know, to do both, you know, male, more stereotyped activities versus female, and to let her really find herself. And I think that, like I said, for these parents to kind of make the stand societally isn't a bad thing. And we're not sure exactly how they're explaining it to, you know, and we won't know how they're explaining it to Storm, and, you know, as he grows up. But I think they're kind of just saying to society, hey, back up and look at this situation, because, you know, there are people who grew up with gender identity issues, or they grew up, you know, people who grew up homosexual, and they knew from very early ages what they were. And the suicide rate of gender identity disorder issue are 20%. And these kids who grew up not really sure of their sexual identity, you know, suicide rates in those populations are really high because they feel forced as a, you know, a square peg in a round hole. So I think that's partly what they might be aware of too, and really wanting to make sure that their child has the way to choose their awareness in a healthy, supportive environment that's not going to, you know, pigeonhole them. The other argument to that, though, is if you grow up in a boxing ring and you never learned how to box, you know, it's kind of difficult to defend yourself. And I think that's partly we do live in a world that is very judgmental. And do we then become judgmental because of that, or do we work on people not being so judgmental? And I think we have to find a balance there, too.
Absolutely. As well as protect our kids, we have to prepare them. We have to prepare them what the reality of the world is.
But I think what this family is saying is that they don't know what Storm's actual sex is yet. So they're taking a wait and see attitude on this. And
well, they know. They said he definitely has, that Storm definitely has. There's no doubt about
the sex, but they don't know the gender.
They don't know the gender identity. Mm-hmm. You're right. Yes.
Because nobody but the Storm knows Storm's gender identity. And, I mean, a recent study done here in Ontario has shown that 78% of trans individuals know and can identify with their gender identity before the age of 10. Most, it's at the age of 4 that they first noticing that the gender they've been assigned at birth isn't actually the way they feel. So this happens really quick with kids when they develop that sense of what their gender is. So Storm doesn't need a lot of time. Only needs 4 years by research standards, and then Storm will know. But I think what the family's trying to do is keep the confusion at a minimum until that happens. And I do want to say one thing that I did not try to contact the family. They have actually asked that no media contact them, and they've refused multiple requests for two free trips to New York to do the talk show circuit. They're declining any media attention whatsoever. So those that are saying that this couple wants attention, they could have had it. I mean,
well, they have had it.
They have had it, and
these children's names are out in the public.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate.
Not many people have a name like Storm.
Best friend of mine.
Who?
Yeah, has Storm as a name. So
that's great.
I do know one.
It's like a soap opera name.
Yeah, but with Storm, Jazz, and Tio, I mean that's pretty a unique family identity. I mean, hats off to the Swedish couple. Because they never released the baby's name.
Good for them.
Or their names. They stayed completely anonymous. And I mean, that was 2 years ago. The child was a 2-year-old. The mother was expecting, and they were so happy with the raising of their first child that they planned on doing the exact same thing with their new baby. So they had 2 years of experience in this, and they were still happy enough to say, yes, I'm going to raise my second child the same way. And one of the comments on one of these things was that someone named Mike Fish on one of these articles in the Star said, I know of other kids born up to 18 years ago, raised with their gender hidden from outsiders with no ill effects. In fact, they're all wonderful kids. So we already know from experience that this works and the kids are not messed up. So, I mean, there's a little bit of anecdotal evidence that it's not causing so much harm, but
then again, they didn't know their names 18 years ago, and now we know these children's names, and I think that especially in the educational system, the Storm is going to be a target for the teachers or in the society as she grows up, or he or she as they grow up.
So Eric, as a bullying kind of aficionado and expert, what do you think about that?
Well, you know, I look at that. The issue with bullying is really about the person inside themselves. And if they're raising, you know, well, let me back up a little bit. When I talk about bullies, I talk about basically victims, persecutors, and rescuers. Victims are only victims if they believe they're victims. So if you raise Storm to be self-assured, self-confident, understand that basically people when they bully him are trying to take his or her power away, then it's going to have a lot less of an influence on somebody who's brought up in a culture where they're typically taught that they don't get their power from themselves. When my daughter was really little, one of the first things I told her is that, Grace, where does your power come from? And I taught her to feel, point inside, and even told her, where does your pretty come from? And she knows it's inside. And even the other day, my wife was talking about something she was wearing, and she goes, Mommy, don't you know your pretty comes from inside, you know? But that so much has to do with our whole bullying culture, even in that way, is that we believe we get our power, our acceptance, our love, our looks, our acknowledgement, all these things from outside of us. So I appreciate so much that these parents are willing to do this to help their child grow up within themselves. Now, if teachers are willing to bring attention to this, that's a teacher issue. That's going to be the kids' issue. If parents hold, or if teachers or other people outside hold judgments, that's a them thing. You know, that we have to make sure that we don't project onto other people that want to be different and have a different way of society. So what I always say is, to heal the bully problem, we have to look at the victims. Because if I choose not to be a victim, it doesn't matter what you do to me. I might be victimized, but I don't have to feel like a victim. And if I don't feel like a victim, I'm not going to become a bully, because every bully has felt like a victim. And even the people who are on their high horses here, running to the rescue of this child who's being mentally abused by his parents, you know, so to speak, as some people are kind of slanted, chronic rescuers in those situations get their power from rescuing victims, and they often end up bullying the bully, you know. So I think we have to be very careful at societal level where we're trying to get our power from, and do we have a problem, because somewhere inside it doesn't sit right with us.
Yeah, and one of the comments here was, it was titled Child Abuse. And this reader said, I agree the parents should have final say on how they bring up their children. A parent that chooses to expose their child to a lifestyle that is not normal in any way should face the same scrutiny. Calling someone genderless flies in the face of common sense. And, you know, that's a common outrage.
But, you know, normal is a statistical term. When we talk about normality, we talk about something that falls within that bell curve in the 68, you know, 34% on either side of the 50% median to get, you know, scientific about it. And we turn it into this kind of pejorative term that we talk about, well, if you're not normal, there's something wrong with you. Well, it's normal in our society to get divorced. Is that healthy? You know, there's a lot of things we could point at statistical normalities about that aren't healthy. I don't think it's healthy that kids are given as much sugar as they are, but that's normal. And so to say that this isn't normal, I think that person is so caught up in these societal expectations and belief systems that they're not stepping outside, again, to look and say, what is healthy versus normal?
So what is healthy? Linda, you help people get healthy, right?
Oh, yeah. And I certainly run into the drawbacks of gender stereotype. I mean, all the men I work with who can't identify emotion other than anger and horny, and that's not an emotion, and all the women who can't protect themselves emotionally and don't have their voice. Absolutely. We need to break these stereotypes, and these parents are making a strong point and pushing the envelope, I think, in a very important direction. I think what the outrage is about is that they're putting their child into the middle of this storm. So if you take that factor out for me, it's a wonderful argument, wonderful gift they're giving society by saying let's open space for not just being male or female, or letting kids have more freedom to decide, but still answering their questions. I think you have to answer children's questions. You know, one of the scenarios that comes up in my mind is when this child goes to mommy and daddy and says, I'm a boy, right? What are they going to say?
Well, that is the question,
yeah.
Isn't it? And, I mean, right now, Jazz is wearing pink dresses and pigtails, but says, I'm a boy.
Yeah, so the question isn't, am I a boy or a girl, but what does it mean to be a boy? Does it have to be in this little box? No, it doesn't. They're giving their child a whole world of meanings about what it is to be a boy, which is great.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's other examples of where kindergarten kids have gotten brutalized by this stuff. I mean, there was a huge story last Halloween that a family brought their little boy to kindergarten dress up for Halloween as Daphne from Scooby-Doo. And there was a huge public outcry about this simple little story about this child that wanted to be Daphne. And it was the same kind of outcry as this one.
It's because the world's not a safe place yet for little boys to dress up like Daphne all the time.
That's right.
We have to create a safe world.
And that's what we need to figure out, is how do we create that safe space where little boys can be Daphne and little girls can be Bruce Lee. And that's okay. And, I mean, I've been struggling for 15 years on this particular piece, so I don't think we're going to get all of those answers today, but I think we have two of the best professionals that we could possibly have on studio here. We're going to take a short commercial break here. This is Michelle Boyce.
And I'm Devil Hamza.
My two guests, Linda and Dr. E, will be back after these breaks on CHRW 94.9 FM.
We are all in this together, brothers and sisters. We can do better.
And we're back. And this is Between the Margins on CHRW 94.9 FM, a show about human rights and people's pursuit of happily ever after. We are talking about the couple in Toronto that have refused to give out the sex of their child. And with me, I have Dr. Eric Fisher, who is a licensed psychologist, author, media consultant, and public speaker, and has helped thousands of adults, children, and families and couples develop healthy life perspectives and relationships. And I have Ms. Linda Martins, who is a marriage and family therapist who has 15 years of experience and specific training and expertise in couple relationships, parenting, children's, men's trauma, and more. So we have the people at the table to talk about this, and we're going to go on with that right now. So, Linda, we're talking about the harm that has happened. And I don't think that this couple meant for this to become an international story. I really don't believe. I've done a lot of media work. I've broken a lot of stories to the media, and I've broken it with a lot of people. And this couple is not looking like people that are out there to change the world. I really, truly believe that these people, you know, thought it would be a great idea for people to know what they're doing. And I think it went horribly wrong on them. And I think myself personally, that's the way it went down. And the fact that they're absolutely hiding from the press at this point gives me a total understanding that they had no idea the can of worms that they were opening.
Now, Linda, I think you're probably going to talk about this, but I think what's going to happen is this is going to bring a lot of negativity towards this family and these children.
That would be one of my worries, and I know you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, right? Hindsight is 2020. They probably did not anticipate what this was going to be, but they did make the decision to, you know, put their agenda, and I think people wonder whose agenda is this, right? In the public eye, I do wonder about storm safety. I wonder about the safety for all the children, you know, who's going to want to make some money out of finding out what gender this baby is.
Money. Don't mention money.
Oh, makes the world go round.
Yeah, in one of our guests' ever so pertinent statement, follow the money, honey. And I think there's a lot of money that's happening on this story, and there's a lot of media outlets that are, you know, selling papers on this around the world, and that's unfortunate, and that's why we're not using the parents' names. That's why we're not using we haven't asked them to be on, and we're not really talking about their family, but the public outcry of this. Because I think the public outcry needs to be talked about. I mean, I think that's really the focus that has turned this fluff piece in the paper into an international event, is the fact that something has happened here that has altered the public's ability to function within their new world. And I run into this all of the time when I'm doing training around somebody who is transitioning from male to female or female to male, and the outcry about that is generally and typically, well, how is it going to affect me? Typically, the trans individual themselves is perfectly okay with everything that's happening to them. The problem comes into play with the family, the friends, everyone else, that how am I going to tell Aunt Mildred? How am I going to... It's all about how they're going to interact. And with parenting, a lot of that is, well, okay, you're doing something that's different from what I'm doing, so I have to venomously protect what I'm doing because I'm right. And I see that a lot with parent raising.
Well, and you bring up a great, great point, because to me, what all this is about is, you know, as we talked about in the show we did last year, the human rights issue was, it's all about power. And underneath all our ways we look at power, what I call our kind of more hierarchical or control-based society, is fear. And the four dichotomies that I say exist in this hierarchical model of power are good and bad, right and wrong, strong and weak, and win and lose. And no one wants to be seen as bad and or wrong and or weak because we lose. But if people really realized how much they really just kind of sold out in ways and gave in to what everybody else said, even though they knew they might be right, but they didn't want to be seen as wrong by society, that's really an issue of control, and behind the need for control is fear. So I think some of what might be happening here, too, is that people are saying, you know what, that is a good idea, but I don't like it, you know, and they can't go against this society. And that's what happens when a lot of people want to change a culture and they're first in the minority. They often get suppressed and squashed when it's really not a bad thing that they're doing. Sometimes the way they go about doing it isn't great, but it challenges people who are in kind of that moral majority, so to speak. And it's scary to people to think, well, gee, what if this is a different or better way, but we bought into this way for so long? That's what's kept religion in power for so long, political parties in power for as long as they've been in power, kings and queens and monarchies and the dictatorships, because people felt afraid to go and challenge the status quo. So I don't blame the people for doing it, and it's hard to stand up for something. And, you know, when you're standing up for your kids, you could say, well, they're part of their agenda. But I say, well, maybe they're really trying to make this world a different place and know that it's going to be tough and difficult. So do you get caught in the fear, or do you step beyond that? And I think that's some of the balance here, too, that we have to look at.
How do you think about that, Linda?
My daughter's pregnant, and she's going to have a baby girl. This all becomes a personal issue, right? So these parents are trying to create... It is a social experiment in some ways, and people are speaking out against that part. They're trying to create, seems to be creating a vacuum around the gender identity. And although I hope they're not, but I don't think that's the only way to go. I asked my daughter to send me an email this morning based on her thoughts of how it affected her negatively and positively to know the gender of her baby beforehand. And one of the things that she said was that it helped her feel close to her baby. I wonder about, you know, whether being a boy or a girl is part of who you are, mm-hmm. and who children find out who they are by bouncing themselves against other people, right? And identifying an identity, a developing identity, is part of growing up, and you can't do that in a vacuum.
I hear what you're saying, and I think that's what a lot of people are saying. And you know, I've been following this story a lot, knowing that I was going to end up doing a show on it, because it was just. Well, I'm in media, and it's just too good to resist. But a lot of the issues that have come up here, and the reason that I needed to do this show is because when I do diversity training in a corporate environment, all of this comes up in that training. Every single time. all of the same arguments, and I'm looking at pages and pages of comments by readers. I'm looking at this is the exact stuff that I deal with every single time I walk into a corporation and deal with diversity training, trying to get people to open up to new experiences, new ideas, and new people. Because just to coin a friend of mine's saying, you know, when somebody hurts you for who you are, there's nothing you can do. You can't protect yourself. It's not like somebody has broken into your car and stolen your car radio. I mean, you can get a better alarm. You can park your car in different places. There's things you can do. But when people hurt you for who you are, there's nothing you can do except change. And who should have to change because society gets in? So when I talk about these issues and I hear the controversies about whether or not Storm is going to get hurt, whether or not Storm is going to get teased, whether or not the parents are abusing Storm, whether or not all of these issues are the exact same issues that I deal with when I'm dealing with a public school grade 7 student transitioning from male to female in a public school.
People don't really understand that you might be a boy or girl on the outside, but you might be something different on the inside. Not a lot of people really get that, you know, and I guess one of the ways we can affect that change is by talking to our family members and saying, you know, let's be open to that. Let's be open to what this child discovers about themselves on the inside.
Yeah. And so this family is dealing with Jazz. And Jazz is 5. And Jazz looks like a little girl when you look at Jazz. But Jazz is a boy and Jazz identifies so far as a boy.
Yep.
And my working with trans people through the years, I mean, this construct of boy and girl really doesn't formulate until middle grade school. You know, somewhere around, you know, grade two, grade three, you know, that's when people are really starting to formulate an opinion about themselves being boy or girl.
Oh, gender identity forms way before that.
Gender identity
does. Yes.
But the terminology and the ability to express outward. I mean, when I'm talking to trans people and counseling them, they talk about, yeah, I was playing with my best friend Sally, and you know, I was told that I can't go to the girl sleepover party because I have an outie and they have an innie, and you know, Sally and I dealt with that years ago. She has an outie belly button. I have an innie belly button, and that's okay. You know, and this is the way kids that I work with that are young and struggling with gender identity are seeing the world. So we've got Jazz, who is obviously struggling with how Jazz is going to fit within the world. We don't know if Jazz is trans. Mm-hmm. We don't know if Jazz is just
androgynous.
Androgynous
people, you know, there are some benefits to being androgynous. They do well when it comes to self-esteem and relationships in the world, research shows.
Yeah, so this family has taken their experience with Jazz and Jazz's comments about gender and said, okay, maybe we really need to do something with our new child. And they're trying something.
I think they may be overestimating their power. I think these processes happen in spite of the influence of parents.
Absolutely. And I know one radio show host dealing with this topic said, well, if you don't help your children to develop their identity, somebody else is going to.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't mean you don't try, and it doesn't mean you don't make your child aware of the issues. Throughout, you know, again, I'm very conscious of that too. It's just even the introduction of Barbies and TV and different things like that with my daughter. People would see me as, you know, maybe a little on the controlling side. I said, I'm not trying to control. I'm trying to allow her the space in the same way to see what's important to her rather than let society determine what's important in terms of her form of dress and, you know, the clothes, the things she plays with and stuff like that. So I think, as I always teach parents, is we're guides and supportive agents. We're not the boss of our kids. Often when we take that controlling manner with our kids, they either are crushed by us or they'll react against it. And doing the opposite of what you are, you know, is no better than veering too much on that path of who you think you are.
So I think
that's where parents can still try that.
Sometimes it's a hard call. If I, you know, if I think back to when my boys were young and if they wanted to go to school wearing a dress, I probably would have discouraged that just based on what response they were going to get in the classroom if they wanted to wear a dress at home. I think they did on a few occasions. That wouldn't have been a problem. But do we have to prepare our kids for the real world?
Yeah. I mean, when I was raising my kids, I raised my kids completely indifferently from a lot of parents. I mean, there are parents that do use the same model as I use, but I empowered my kids. They have had, since the day they were born, equal vote in the family. And that creates huge issues for me as a parent.
Mm-hmm.
But they have always had an equal vote. And their opinions have always been valued. And that empowerment, I always have taught my kids, don't throw a temper tantrum at me. Use your words. Teach me what you want. Tell me what you need and what you want to do, and if you can convince me as a parent that this is a good idea, then we'll do it.
But you have final say.
I always have final say, good. And that's a parent. So, but I've been outvoted on many, many occasions.
But I love it that you make your kids convince you rather than you trying to convince them why they shouldn't have a voice. That's beautiful.
Yeah, and but it creates issues through the school system. I can tell you that from grade 1 to grade 7, every single teacher that my child had, my son, David, had in school, either quit, changed positions, or left teaching in some manner after they had my son as a student.
You're not holding your child responsible for that.
I'm not, but the conversations that I had with teachers, I mean, my son's grade 2 teacher called me weekly. Michelle, I can't deal with him. And I'm like, well, why not? And she's like, well, he keeps asking questions. He keeps challenging me. And I'm like, was he right? And she's like, that doesn't matter. He can't be disrupting the class like this. And I'm like, no, it does matter. Is he right? And if you can't tell me yes or no to that question, then we can't continue this conversation.
But in a classroom, to play devil's advocate, there's a time to answer questions and there's a time to work quietly.
There is. And David's always respected that.
Oh.
But he's always been very, very honest about his opinions. And he's used to, so if a teacher comes up and gives information that he feels is wrong, information, you know, North America is on the other side of the world and he knows it's otherwise, then he's going to question that. And when he's and in grade 2, he was always right. That's the thing. The teacher was getting the information wrong, and David's an extremely highly intelligent kid. And so he would call her on it, and she couldn't cope.
Good for him.
Yeah, but it created great amounts of issues going through school with him and with both of my children. And I've always had to be there as an advocate for them within the school system, and they've had some great teachers that have really come up to the task and have really said, okay, I have this child that is going to engage me in this way that I haven't been engaged before, and I'm up to that. And it's been a beautiful thing when they've hit those teachers.
Mm-hmm. And you may have set them up to have the fantasy that everyone would listen to them as well as you do.
I haven't set them up to that because, I mean, my kids know oppression.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We live in a very religious community with lesbian parents, and my kids are very aware of marginalization and oppression.
Yeah.
And they know that the majority of the people aren't going to agree with them, but that doesn't stop them from expressing themselves.
Good for them.
And I mean, every single time I meet a new partner, it's very challenging for them to integrate into my family. Because we have a family and a parenting style that, and a family dichotomy that is very different from most families. Mm. And that creates struggles very similar to what these families are going to have through the years. And it's not going to be easy, but hopefully Storm has strong parents.
Well, I think in the, growing up in that environment, he'll be pretty strong himself, you know. So I think that's a very positive trait that they're.
You gendered him. You gendered Storm.
Oh, I did. Oh my gosh. Do I get fined on the air for that? Or?
It's hard. It's really difficult.
It is. But I love the discussion. I'm kind of glad it, when issues come up like this, they're difficult. But like I said, I think they're discussions we need to have to look at our own blindness. And I think we have a lot of cultural blindness and things we just accept as, well, that's the way it is. And even though it's not right. And that's just our own apathy and our own sense of just getting kind of beat up and worn out. And that's what I see happen with so many kids that, as you have taught your kids, don't get worn out by that. Stand up and stand in your truth. Stand in who you are. And we could all really work that out. I mean, what you teach your kids is what I write in my parenting book, you know, The Art of Empowered Parenting, is equity models of parenting, where we're all equal, but we have different gifts, strengths, handicaps, wisdom, experience, knowledge, and understanding. And as we find that, we find an honor or equity. We're not all supposed to be the same. That's not the purpose. Our journey in life is to grow, to become, to experience, to feel failure that tells us when it's time to learn, that every emotion out there and every experience out there is there to help us to learn and to become. And I think in our hierarchical societies, we turn those emotions and experiences into the goods, the bads, the rights, the wrongs, the strongs, the weaks. And that's what makes this so difficult.
Exactly. I mean, one of my failures as a parent was one moment that I had, my daughter was going to figure skating, and all the rest of the kids pretty much wore, you know, jogging pants and shirts, and she had this wonderful frilly skating dress that she wanted to wear, and she's like, I want to wear that, and the words came out of my mouth, no, the rest of the kids probably aren't wearing that, and then I stopped myself, and it's like, wow, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. But it's so habit forming with parents. You know, you don't want your kids to get hurt. You don't want them to face criticism. You don't want them to face the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's the best thing for them to be themselves and, you know, have everybody else walk in behind them and let them be leaders.
Or followers. They're happy to be a follower.
Right.
What do you guys think about this one? And the title is No One Can Be Completely Unbiased. And it says that they're in a liberal world, the idea of raising a genderless baby is absurd. Your oldest son did not choose to wear a dress because he just chose to wear a dress. Every decision a child makes is done so based on experiences before. You may have unknowingly pushed your son to wear a dress, but the reality is you did. Because, and this what this person is saying is that because they made the dress available, they've created their son Jazz that wears dresses.
Yes, but and the question is, why should the dress not be available? Why should the dress not be available? Why is that a bad thing that all is available, right? That's the parent's point.
Exactly. But
yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Eric.
Well, in some cultures, you know, again, we have to look at culturally, you know, and in Ireland or Scotland, men would still wear kilts, you know, and if you go back 100 years or so, it wasn't uncommon for men to wear long berets and things like that. And going to African cultures or other cultures around the world, styles of dress are totally socially dictated. And, you know, you look at Lady Gaga, you know, I mean, that's creative. You know, so honor the creativity and the differences, and who knows, maybe in 20 years, men will be wearing skirts again. You know, you never know.
There are also,
I think, again, we have to be careful of those societal expectations.
There are also cultures where there are third genders, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it isn't just male-female.
Yeah, there's studies actually out there that have showed there's five distinct genders. And quite frankly, gender is the only segregation left allowed in society. I mean, we no longer segregate black washrooms, white washrooms. We don't segregate communities by any other method of diversity. The only social standard left for segregation is male and female.
If there were only stalls, I would be okay with a co-ed bathroom, right?
Yeah. I mean, I had this guy come up in this workshop that I was doing, and he's like, yeah, we were on a bus tour in Europe, and we're 3 hours on the bus, and everybody had to go. So we stopped in this little quaint town, and it was an outdoor restroom with a big sign men and a big sign women's, and everybody filed off the bus, and they went into the appropriate door and met in the middle. Everybody just went to the bathroom, they giggled a little, and got back on the bus. How's that for a world?
Yeah.
So last points, guys. I want to ask you a direct question. I mean, we don't know everything about this family. And obviously, I think we can all say that we're in agreement that the fact that the children's names are out there in the press is harmful and probably not in the best interest of the children. I mean, I think we can all agree on that piece. Should the family change and not do this? Or should they continue? Linda?
I think they're not really doing that much. I think they're just creating space around this child to develop their own gender identity. I don't think that they're doing any harm to the child other than putting this family in front of the press.
Eric?
Yeah, I'm totally in agreement. I think that a lot of this is blown up by the media, and that the parent wrote a pretty thoughtful response in what her intentions are, and I'm supportive of it.
Wonderful. So what about if you're born with a penis, you're a boy. If you're born with a vagina, you're a girl.
If you're born with a penis, you're a boy. And all that means is you have a penis. I mean, all the other meanings of what it is to be a boy can be diverse and varied and wide spectrum. Same with a girl.
So I got a clip here. And I just want to play it, and it talks about some of the last issues here. And, yeah, I just took them by surprise. They're chit-chatting in the booth instead of doing their jobs. And since my boss is out there, I can I can say that. Okay, here's the clip.
Gender neutral. They won't tell anybody what the sex of the child is. They'll keep it in a secret if this kid's a boy or a girl. I mean, they've named the kid Storm, which I think is appropriate. Baby Storm is a good name for a kid that's going to grow up to be such a mental disaster that FEMA won't be able to help this kid out. I've seen pictures of the kid. I hope it's a boy. Otherwise, they should change the kid's name to Chaz Bono because that's the path this kid is on. I mean, how can you raise a kid gender neutral? What are the kid's goals going to be in life to be gender neutral? A mannequin? Is that your choice in life, is to become a mannequin or maybe an anatomical designer for Ken and Barbie? Not G.I. Joe, because G.I. Joe has a beard, okay? That'd be a gender role, having a beard, and then you'd have to explain to the kid what Katie Holmes and Kelly Preston do for a living. I mean, this is sad, and this is child abuse. This is why parents need licenses. This kid, I guarantee, is getting abused because it's being starved to death, because I guarantee a mom and dad are taking turns breastfeeding the kid, so the kid's only getting nutrition half the time. The other half, the kid's living off sweat and right guard. I mean, it's disgusting. I mean, what happens if this poor kid gets kidnapped? What kind of Amber Alert can you have for a gender-neutral kid? Is it, you know, a pretty basic question. Is it a little boy or a little girl missing? Well, we can't disclose that. Well, that's going to narrow down and make the search successful. I mean, this is ridiculous. The poor kid will never pass a standardized test in school because he'll never be able to fill in the circle. He'll never be able to pass the first question, male or female, okay? There's no other on that one. Even when you get older and the choice is Mr., Mrs., there's no mystery, okay? There's no mystery choice there on forms when you get older. I mean, this kid doesn't have a chance. I mean, what kind of TV is this kid going to be raised on? What is gender neutral on TV besides the WNBA? That's the only thing that the kid isn't going to figure out if they're men or women. He or she is just going to figure out that these people suck at basketball. Otherwise, this kid is screwed. I mean, it's just nature. No matter what your sexuality is, there are gender roles in any type of relationship. Life is like a strip club, all right, people? This is my philosophy. Life is like a strip club. You're either the pole or you work the pole.
And that brings us to, that is what Storm and Storm's poor parents have to face in this world. And I don't think there's anybody that can agree any of that is right.
I don't agree with that, any of that, and that's why I'm concerned about the safety of this child.
Was he knocking breastfeeding in there?
He knocked almost everything in
ranting,
there.
Ranting has limited entertainment value after a few minutes.
Yeah, somebody's intent like that is to look at themselves and say, hey, I'm so funny, and look at all these creative little sound bites they come up with, and, you know, obviously he's pretty amused with himself, but, you know, a lot of people on the radio, their job is to evoke emotion. People who are shock jocks evoke emotion, and they want to get people riled up. And that's the intention, but it hurts. It hurts people, it hurts societies, and that's, to me, how we also get numb to this stuff even more, is we listen to it, you know. So I appreciate more thought-provoking shows that have, you know, the intelligent discussions. Does it evoke the same emotion? Not necessarily, but evokes thought. And that's what we really have to do, is think carefully about the steps we take in life and that we take in this world.
Wonderful. Well, we're out of time, folks. Thank you so much to Linda and Eric for coming on the show. Catch the previous show. It's Free Speech versus Human Rights when Dr. E was on. Catch our blogs at www.betweenthemargins.ca. And this is Michelle Boyce.
And I'm Devil Hamza.
Hope you find your happily ever after, wherever that means to you. And jazz is up next on CHRW 94.9 FM.